It's a made-up name. It's not, my colleague Diane Martindale, when we began the company together in 1981, I didn't have really an idea of what to call the company. And she came up with DiCapo because her name is Diane, and my name is Capasso. And so she invented DiCapo. And it's a just made-up name. It means nothing.
I'm the artistic director, and aside from sitting in on auditions, which, of course, are very, very important, we do that once or twice a year, I have a children's chorus that is an ongoing, very, very busy thing.
Opera-going audiences in the United States tend to be older, and it's a big problem to develop audiences, younger audiences for opera. It's starting to happen now, again, but there's an enormous gap because for many, many years, culture was ignored in the American school systems. They never ignore athletics, but they would ignore music and art. And so you have an entire generation of people who are essentially ignorant about the arts and opera and whatnot because it was not given to them as part of their schooling.
Well, they all would like to be singers, but what they're really being prepared for is to be the audiences of future.
It began with the organist at the time coming to me and saying, there's a wonderful little opera company that are looking for some space. And I said, well, we had space downstairs that wasn't being used.
In 1990, I found, we performed a concert in the church above us. And we needed a place for people to change their clothes and put their coats and things. And so they said, oh, you can go downstairs and there's this, you know, what was formerly the lower church. And I came down here and there was this empty, enormous place. And it was like a vision for me. I saw in front of my eyes, I said, this could be fantastic theater.
This is the church that a number of years ago opened its doors to DiCapo Opera. The church had an upper church where we're standing now and another church below it. And it was the church below that we renovated and made into the opera house.
We removed five altars, we removed confessionals, we excavated the orchestra pit, we put the theater, we constructed the theater the way it is right now.
We tried to keep as much of the church as possible down here in the DiCapo Theater. So we made every effort to keep the pillars, like the pillar in back of me. Also in the lobby, we kept all the stained glass windows in the church. And even at one point, we took the stained glass windows from an area where they weren't seen and put them in the interior of the building, and we lit them up.
We, in fact, many times have performed concerts, larger format concerts, in the church above. We performed the Requiem of Giuseppe Verdi up there on the anniversary of his death.
It's very unique. I mean, you can hear the church organ occasionally, you know, for the masses. And, you know, when the Pope came, for example, they were celebrating mass upstairs, and we had all of the members of the diocese down here, and all the nuns and all the priests, you know, coming through and making, you know, their hellos as we were in the process of starting a show. And it's just, it's a very warm environment.
There are some churches that have little theater companies, but I think this is the only church that has a real established opera house.
Next season, we're going to produce the American premiere of the Requiem Mass of Gaetano Donizetti, which has never been produced, and that will also be in the church upstairs. There are seven private dressing rooms. Each dressing room It's painted with the theme of an opera. Because when we were doing the renovation, I had the painters here to paint the scenery, and the scenery was not ready. So I told them, come upstairs and just paint the dressing room. And they paint seven rooms with seven different operas, so the dressing rooms look different. This is Wagner. Before was Madame Butterfly. This is Wagner. This is very light. This is Camellia's La Traviata, but it's very hard to see. It's a light. Pagliacci. Somebody kissed the wall. Many times. Usually, this is the larger, a little bit bigger than all the others. Usually the leading lady comes in this room. We are preparing our next production, is Turandot Puccini. This is the headdress for the princess. And this is Angela, who is a costume designer for Turandot production, who's here. And it's going to work, come with us on Crucible to work as an assistant. But normally she is a resident designer here to design our costumes. And she built this for Turandot. And here are two costumes also being prepared for the next production of Turandot.
This little theater is an absolute jewel. It fulfills a wonderful function in the city of New York, because as we know, there are two major companies, the Metropolitan Opera and the New York City Opera, and those theaters have a very large budget.
They have probably a larger administrative staff. They perhaps have more grants or funding, and, you know, for all practical purposes, they've created a structure or a system that has one person do specialized tasks, as opposed to Da Capo, where you have more of a learning ground and you are exposed to all different types of opportunities.
When you attend a performance here, we perform with full production value, with full orchestra, with big-voiced singers, but in a very intimate auditorium, so that the last row of our theater is closer to the stage than the first row of the Metropolitan Opera is to the stage. That's because their orchestra pit is pretty much the size of our theater.
I'm sure you are all familiar, all your listeners are familiar with August Strindberg, the great, very great Swedish playwright of the last century, and it was he who promoted the idea of the intimate theater. In that small place, just like here at the Da Capo Opera, the audience is drawn into the action of what goes on in stage.
You can enjoy it more sometimes than at the Met, where you may be so far away you don't see the faces or the expressions.
About its singers and wants to give them every opportunity possible to succeed and move forward in careers.
The Resident Artist Program is basically set up for people who are between their schooling and between their professional careers. So it's sort of a stepping stone between those two places. Some are called resident artists, some are called apprentice artists, and there are programs all over the nation that, you know, promote the schooling between school and your professional career. So it's sort of a, you know, that, well, some of us like to call it a type of purgatory.
In many cases, for our resident artists tend to be younger people. So we have them in many of the roles of the young people, wherever it was appropriate to put them in a role.
Michael might be able to help them find space, or might be able to help them, you know, coordinate whatever they would need. And he's very loyal that way, and very supportive.
This is my third season at Da Capo, and as a resident artist.
Every year we give a concert. Their very first event of the year for them is to come out and sing an aria, and with no intermission, and there are usually 40 of them. So You can imagine 40 singers, 40 arias, one after another, after another, after another. It's almost, for the audience, this is death by aria, because you're getting an aria. It's like being stoned with arias. But it's a very, very exciting concert, and it's a lot of fun, and it gives us a chance to get to know the singers for the first time.
Michael and I met in 1996. I follow his productions and his career. I also saw his work in Orlando, Florida. I saw his Aida. I saw his Rigoletto. I saw in Hartford, Connecticut, his Lucia di Lammermoor.
Then we do Turandot, Puccini's last opera, which finishes a cycle that we began for 15 years ago to produce all of the operas of Puccini. Then we do a New York premiere of another contemporary opera by Tobias Picker, The Fantastic Mr. Fox. And then we do the American premiere of a Janáček piece, Sharka, which was brought to my attention by Tobias Picker. He said, you know, that Janáček's first opera, Sharka, has never been produced in America. My favorite opera is Italian opera. My favorite composer is Puccini, with very, very closely followed by Verdi. And so, and in this season we're producing one Puccini, one Rossini. Next year it's going to be a Puccini and Verdi. We open the season with Rigoletto next year. People who will buy single tickets only for the contemporary work, you know, they'll buy a ticket for Crucible and Fantastic Mr. Fox and nothing else. They're not interested in traditional opera.
They want to experience the newness. They want to still, while they may be older or at a different part of their life, they want to see what opera is doing, how it's evolving, how it's changing. And that would involve, of course, bringing in Tobias Picker or bringing in Robert Ward or, you know, any of the other composers.
Some modern operas are a little not as easy to listen to, and I really like this opera because it has some romantic moments to it and melodies that you can sing and you can get stuck in your ear and you go home thinking about it.
I'm surprised it's over 45 years ago that I wrote it, and but it hasn't, it's been performed more, it's been done many times in various European countries and in Asia, so and all over this country.
I think it's very well crafted, musically speaking, and I think it works beautifully in the drama of the piece.
They very often do it again because the students in universities love to do this piece. It's such a, the story just gets to them.
When we finally came to agreement that we were going to participate in the festival, I suggested this opera. I know this opera very well. I like it very, very much. We performed it here 10 years ago and we had a big success. And I thought it was important for the American company in this festival to bring an American opera.
It's a great way to bring, you know, performing to English pieces to Europe, and then also for Americans to work with European directors, which is a completely different animal.
Ez mindig érdekes, hogy egy európai vagy egy más ország, nem is kell földrészeket nézni, egy más országban való gondolkozás, azaz, hogy ugye itt nálunk, itt élünk, itt élek, itt dolgozom, tehát nekem mások az alapok, mások az evidenciák.
Mary, is it true there'll be 14 women jailed?
De hát, hogy az embert elkényeztették otthon, tehát otthon, amikor ugye prózát rendezel, az minimum 6-7, ha operát rendezel, akkor is ez úgy összejött, ez a 6-7. De mondjuk akár a Versailles munkám, akár az Ötvös Péter balkonja, az is körülbelül ennyi idő volt. Tehát nincs több idő operára.
This is, in some cases, actually a longer rehearsal period than you're going to get with other companies, which I think for a lot of people is like, oh, I can't believe that you put that together in 2 weeks.
It is an interesting contrast between opera in the United States and opera in Europe. In the last 20, 25 years, the American singers gained great dominance in the world of opera, partly because of their natural gift, the voice, but mainly because of their training. Trying to contrast that with the European singers, their training is different. They wear sort of the stamp of the artistic environment from which they come.
Since this project has begun, Philippe Delacroix, who is the director of Mezzo, has been to New York, and we met. He was here at the theater, and I'm trying to collaborate with them also on a project that we have here, a concert of celebrating the 150th birthday of Puccini, and would be nice to try and get them involved. I'm very excited about Mezzo. I wish that Mezzo was in the United States. Hopefully it will be soon.
Because you have to know one thing, that music is a real universal language. And I tell you, when you lead a company broadcast in 39 countries with no absolute nationality, of course, as I told you, we are based in France, but this is a real international channel, and this is made possible because music is the only universal language, and this is a really important step for me.
I really want to expand the profile of the Capo Opera internationally, and I felt that if I had the opportunity to have a significant presence in Europe 3 years in a row, that would do that. But I think it's important to keep it going and to try and build on the success of the first season to the second and to the third, and introduce our company to the European audiences and introduce some important American operas to Europe as well. Was very much my idea. I wanted, we've got along very, very well the first time, and we had a big success with the production, and it was a good chemistry with my staff at my theater and with the American singers getting to work with him. Next season for the festival will produce Emmeline by Tobias Picker. Tobias is our artistic advisor to the company, which he became after we produced his opera. Tobias was a prominent composer of orchestral music and piano music before, and then this was his first opera, and since that time now he writes other music, but he's now considered really an opera composer, because after that he wrote Fantastic Mr. Fox, which is the opera we're doing this season, and then Thérèse Raquin, which is the opera we did, and then American Tragedy, which was at the Metropolitan Opera.
We did, like I said, the music of Tobias Picker concert this previous season, and that's where I sang the Emmeline aria.
I had done the role of Suzanne in Thérèse Raquin when it was here at De Capo, and that was 2007, the spring of 2007, and having him around here again, you know, he could change something at the last minute or revise or whatever, and he's just going to be wonderful to have on board for this. It'll be great. So
Tobias is a very, very important American composer. He had a commission from the Metropolitan Opera a couple of years ago. His next commission is for the Washington Opera with Placido Domingo.
As a singing artist, you have the pressure of the director's vision and the conductor's vision, but then once you're working with a living composer, then you also have the pressure, that additional pressure.
Tobias is a very much along the lines when he writes his music of the great American opera composers, like Robert Warden, Carlisle Floyd, and Samuel Barber.
You're getting to communicate with the person who thought it all up and, you know, has the ideas and can guide you the way they first saw it.
I think it's also very, very American. It's an American story based on a true story. Very powerful drama.
Szegény vidék városból 14 éves lányt elviszik, elküld a család textiljába dolgozni, ahol szemet vetve a munkafelügyelő, teherbe esik, és szül egy gyereket. És van egy Anna nevű nagynény, aki elvisz egy gyárba, és az eltűnik a gyereket.
The music itself is very beautiful, and the range is quite wide in terms of the actual pitches from the top of the tessitura to the bottom, but beautiful range of emotions for someone to act in the role of Emmeline. And then, of course, there's a wonderful baritone that would be the lead for, I would imagine, one of the other competition roles.
Emmeline is who say more about gyereket, sirajtő gyereket keresünk. És véletlenül a családhoz kerül egy 20 éves fiatalember, albérlőként, és egymásba szeretnek, és összeházasodnak, és kiderül ez a fiam. Mert hazudtak neki, mert nem lány szült, hanem fiú szült. Ha ez kiderül, akkor az a lány azt mondja, hogy én ugyanúgy szeretlek, akár fiamként, akár a férjemként, most a fiamként szeretnének, ne hagyja el.
The role of Emmeline, Act 1 and Act 2 are separated by 20 years. And initially, one singer performed the role, and they had to try and make her look either younger or older in order to accommodate that. And then we're going to be looking for a young, handsome tenor for the role of Emmeline's husband, Matthew. And we'll be looking for an older, severe mezzo-soprano.
Nagyon jó meló, nagyon nehéz, nagyon-nagyon-nagyon nehéz. Az Emmeline, tehát a címszerep, az mondjuk szerintem, az vetekszik mondjuk egy Lady Macbeth-tel, amit ugye az operában egyik legnehezebb szerepének tartanak. Emmeline ez egy iszonyatosan elképesztően nehéz szoprán. A Hanna, ez a bizonyos nagynéni, az egy ilyen mezzoszoprán, de eléggé nagyon a szopránt el kell húzni a mezzoszopránból. A Matthew az pedig egy tenor, tehát a legnehezebbek.
With the opera competition and festival with mezzo, that I would consider is step number one for Di Capo to get European exposure.
The New Yorker magazine says that we are the number three opera company in New York. There's the Metropolitan, of course, is number one. And then the New York City Opera, and then us. Although this season, we are number two, because the New York City Opera is not performing this season. They're closed.